The Make-A-Wish Foundation has been serving a unique and vital role in helping strengthen and empower children battling critical illness since 1980. The original wish granters, Kay and Tommy Austin, will be special guests at the Make-A-Wish Northeast New York Gala on March 23rd at the Hall of Springs in Saratoga Springs, New York. That is tomorrow. The event will focus on the mission of the local organization with Wish kids and families in attendance to share their stories. And the Austins will represent wish granters, the volunteers vital to turning wishes into actual experiences. This morning, we are joined by Tommy Austin, as well as CEO of Make-A-Wish Northeast New York, William Trigg. Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you very much for being with us. Good
morning, Joe.
Thank you.
A great pleasure to have you on the program. William, let us begin with you as to the work and the work that you are doing in this region and ultimately how that folds into the work being done across the country.
Sure. And call me Bill, please.
I will.
So we are Make-A-Wish Northeast New York is one of 60 chapters of the Make-A-Wish Foundation of America that's based down in Phoenix, Arizona. We cover the 15 counties that make up the 518 and 838 area codes. And we are we grant within our 15-county region between 90 and 100 wishes a year for children and teenagers between 2.5 and 18 years of age with who are diagnosed with a critical illness that would qualify them for a wish for Make-A-Wish.
So it really this is something that as I mentioned in 1980 that this has it's one of those things that this is a really good idea and should be done over and over again, right? I mean, it makes sense.
It does, but I will tell you, Joe, that we talk about the Make-A-Wish experience being something that's not just nice to do, but something that really is vital to the treatment of the kids to help them to be able to get better.
Talk a little bit about that.
So when Make-A-Wish was established back in 1980, it was established with the idea of providing wishes for children who were terminally ill. And Tommy can talk more about that since he was intimately involved in all that in the early days. But as time went on and as more and more kids have been surviving these illnesses, we talked about the Make-A-Wish experience being part of the medicine to help these kids get better. So in our chapter, for example, I can tell you that based on our records that to date we have now granted more than 1,850 wishes in the 32 years that we've been a chapter. We know that more than 80% of those kids are still alive and well today. So we know both anecdotally, but also there is some medical research that's been done that shows a correlation between the wish experience and the ability of these kids to get better over time.
Tommy Austin, tell us your story as how you got involved in this and from the very beginning.
Well, I retired as senior special agent in the United States Customs Service. My area of expertise was working drug smugglers that use airplanes. And I'm sure you've seen on the news where an airplane would be airdropping to a ground crew or a boat crew. A citation in behind it, the chase plane, a tracker, and a Black Hawk helicopter in behind it. I was the guy in the Black Hawk helicopter that got out and went and got the bad guys.
Okay, that seems like a really cool job.
Sometimes
dangerous, but a very cool job.
It was a little more exciting than you'd really like for it to be at times, but that's what I did. And my wife was going to school with the little boy, Chris Gracious, whose wish started the Make-A-Wish Foundation. And she was at my house and studying with my wife. And I came home one day, and there was a little boy about 4 years old laying on my couch, and he had short hair. He and my daughter was three. My daughter was three, and they were laying on the couch, and it had been years since I'd seen a short-haired kid. So I walked over and I rubbed his head, and I said, "What do we have here?" He had a gun. He pulled it on me. I said, "Freeze! I'm a police officer." So I froze. He got off the couch. He searched my pockets. Somehow he missed a .357 Magnum upside down shoulder holster, the .45 on the hip, and the .25 boogie gun in the right hip pocket.
But somehow,
He was satisfied I was clean. He holstered his weapon. He stuck out his hand. He said, "Hi, I'm Chris." And from that moment on, we were great buds. We were partners. And I found out he loved police officers. So I gave him a U.S. Customs patch. He had a little Levi jacket on. And he liked to wear that Levi jacket out, trying to figure out where he's going to wear that patch. He's on the right arm, the left arm, on the back. And he finally decided he's going to wear it on the left side over his heart, because that's where a police officer wears his badge. To him, that was his badge. And we became great friends. And he was going to grow up, and we were going to put bad guys in jail together. He had leukemia, and the prognosis wasn't real bad. And this was in early 1977. And through the years, we developed a really close relationship. And as an officer, as police officers, we've seen officers get shot in the arm back in the 70s up here in Massachusetts or someplace. An officer got shot in the arm and he died. And I guess it's because when we play cops and robbers, when we're children, you get shot, you're supposed to die. Yeah. But right on the other hand, we've seen officers get shot through the heart and they live. We've seen officers Danny Cunningham, HPD, got shot in the left eye, and he lived. And so I knew that if we could do something to give him a reason to live, that it might work. The mind will not let the body die if we have a purpose in mind. And you see this quite often in the elderly, a granddaughter's graduation, a wedding, an anniversary, a birthday. And for some goal in our life, if we've got a purpose in our mind, the mind would not let the body die. And so I knew that if we could do something to help this little boy live, that's the whole purpose in me doing it. I asked U.S. Customs when it got close to the time to help me do this wish, and they wouldn't do it. And I don't think that my request got out of their branch, let alone their wing in Washington, D.C. So my next project was to try to get DPS to do it. So Ron Cox, a narcotics agent, and Mike Stevens and I were on a surveillance out in the desert. It was a place called the Jap Camp, and that's where they interred the Japanese in World War II. And the problem with smuggling dope into these desert strips, Joe, is that the strips are 1,200, 1,800 feet long, and you land, offload the dope, and you got to taxi down to the end of the runway, turn around, and taxi back. And if you run off your airplane off the end of the runway, you're stuck in the desert. It's not like you can call AAA and say, listen, I've got an airplane stuck out here in the desert. Would you come and pick it up, pull me out? So the main street was still a viable street, and all they had to do was to land on, offload the dope, and then take off, so, which was smart on their part. Well, we were there all day long and all night long, and what we didn't know was that the airplane had overgrossed and lost an engine on takeoff, and it crashed and burned, and the two of them were crispy critters in the desert in Sonora, Mexico, and 3,500 pounds of marijuana burn up. And so we stayed all night long, all day long, waiting on this airplane to come back. And up into the night, the second night, I told Ronnie and Mike about this little boy that wanted to be a police officer. And he believed that if you had a fire at your house, the first person you'd want to call would be a police officer, because everybody knows police officers carry a fire extinguisher in their car, and a quick response would put it out. And he knew if he got lost, the first person he'd call would be a police officer, because everybody knows police officers know where the streets are. They even know where the alleys are. And he knew in his own little heart that if he got lost and he and his grandmothers were out walking and they come to a busy street and couldn't get across, that an officer would come by and help them. And all he ever wanted to do was grow up and be a police officer. Well, we got out of the car and we regained our composure, and certainly we wouldn't be crying out there in the middle of that desert. And we got back in the car and we decided we were going to give him a Smokey Bear hat and a helicopter ride. If we would have known then what we know now, we would have gone out the next day and put that wish together. But I believe God has his own timetable and his own reasons. And we waited until right before he was going to pass away. And I'd gone to an operation in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, in February of 1980. And I got back home probably April the 2nd. On April the 23rd, his mom called me. It was real early in the morning. She said, "Chris is in the hospital. They're giving him platelets for the last time. They don't think he's going to live through the night. And he wants to see you. If you don't want to, I understand." But, Joe, I operated on two premises in 32 years of law enforcement. Number one, you never give up your gun, no matter what. And number two, you never desert your partner, even unto death. And this little boy is going to grow up and be my partner, and we were going to put bad guys in jail together. And I said, "I'll be right there." She said, "No, I'm taking him home." I said, "I'll meet you." She said, "No, he wants to come see you." I said, "I'll wait." About a half hour came, and I had to go out in the car and get him. And dear God, he was so pale. He was gray. His teeth were chattering. His hands were shaking. He couldn't walk. He couldn't talk. I took him inside our house, put him on the couch, and I'd made a bust the week before, and I had pictures of the bad guys kneeling beside the airplane and dope stacked out beside the airplane. And I showed him those pictures, and it seemed to help him and revived him a little bit. And so he stayed with us about an hour and a half, and I took him out, put him in the car, came back in. My wife and I held each other and cried because we knew he wasn't going to live. So I called Ron Cox, and I told him, I said, "Ron, old Chris is really sick. Now it's time to get that Smokey Bear hat." Well, Ronnie had been in narcotics about 8 or 10 years, moved a couple of times, and the Smokey Bear hat was crushed. We couldn't give him a crushed up Smokey Bear hat. And meanwhile, Ronnie had called the helicopter people and says, "Can we come and take a tour of the facility and let him see the helicopter?" The guy said, "We can do better than that. We'll give him a ride. We'll think up some reason to do it." So we've certainly got to take some paper from our operation over to headquarters. So we'll just pick him up on the way. And so they called me on Thursday night. And told me that we could do it Monday morning at 8 o'clock. So Friday morning, I called Chris, and I said, and he said, "Hello." I said, "Hey, Chris, how would you like a ride on a real police helicopter?" Joe, immediately, his voice changed. He said, What, Tom? You're joking. I said, "No, I'm not. I don't joke about stuff like that." 8 o'clock Monday morning, we're going to go over to the hospital, and helicopter's going to come, and we're going to take a ride on the helicopter. "Oh, Tom, I'll be ready. So 6 o'clock Monday morning, the phone rang. "Hello?" He said, "Hi, Tom, it's me. It's me, Chris. You hadn't forgotten, have you?" And I said, "No, I hadn't forgotten." He said, "Well, listen, I've been up an hour, and I've already had my shower. I'm dressed. I've cleaned up my room, made up my bed, and I'm ready to go." And I said, "Well, it won't do any good, son, for us to go over there until 8 o'clock. Well, I'll come pick you up." And when Chris got nervous, he'd wring his hands. And when I drove up out in the driveway, you should have seen, he was wringing his hand, walking that driveway, and you should have seen the look on his face. He was smiling from ear to ear. He knew it was true. And I guess the best part of the day was when the helicopter came into the land, the ground residents blew the trash cans out in the street. And he's, oh, look at that, Tom, look at that. And I turned him around and had his head against my stomach. And he's looking underneath his elbow. Look, hey, look at that, Tom, look at that. And I told him, I said, don't you puke on that airplane, boy. Because the deal is, if you use a potty or you puke on the airplane or helicopter, you clean it up. So don't you do that. And he said, oh, I won't. And because of the ground, the density altitude, I couldn't ride because they had to lift up and go out. And if we could have taken off, I could have gone. But so I got my wife and I kissed him by, and he went and I went, she went to work, and I went to over to meet him at the DPS headquarters. I'm driving up the street, and I see a patrol car coming out of the east parking lot. Red lights and sirens were going. The car was all over the road. And I figured the guy got a call card, got in the car, put it on the seat, slammed his door, the pressure put it off into the floorboard, and he's leaning over trying to get his call card to see where he's going. Chris was sitting on Sergeant Jim Eaves' lap driving that patrol car. And drove, hey, Tom, look, hey. And so we went in and into the colonel's office, and they stood him on the desk, pinned, put a Smokey Bear hat on him, made him swear, state your name, Chris Gracious. Do you swear to uphold the law and the Constitution of the United States, the laws and the Constitution of the state of Arizona? I do. So help you God, I do. And the colonel was pinning the badge over the custom patch, and he's saying, no, that's my custom patch, and that's the only time I ever really observed him to lose his temper. He didn't like that. But from that wish came the Make-A-Wish Foundation. I had no idea. I had absolutely no idea that a single act of kindness would turn into the world's largest wish-granting organization. Joe, all I wanted to do was to save his life, and it worked for 11 days.
11 days.
Yeah.
I listened to you tell that story, and I still see the emotion and the moist eyes that you have, as I think everyone in the studio has. And it speaks to what of how meaningful that was for you, and I assume for so many of the wish granters the incredible help and greatness it is for the grantee, but also for those who are making it possible.
Oh yeah, you know, we take these children and they're so sick, and they look like they've been jerked through a knothole backwards, you know.
Yeah.
And they send them to wherever they want to go, to Disney, to meet a celebrity, to a ball game, to swim with the whales or swim with the dolphins and the turtles, and they come back and they've got Mickey Mouse ears on, and they've got a smile on their face, and that makes it all worthwhile, and it gives them hope, and it takes this whole entire family out of a very stressful situation of needles and doctors and white coats and hospital smells, and puts them as a family where the dad doesn't have to go to work, mom doesn't have to go to work, brothers and sisters are out of school, and they all spend time together as a family. And sometimes it really turns things around.
The Make-A-Wish Northeast New York's 2019 gala takes place tomorrow at 6 p.m. at the Hall of Springs in Saratoga Springs, New York. And Bill, as the CEO of Make-A-Wish New York, I mean, you're trying to keep up with Tommy all the way every day, aren't you?
Yes. We in our chapter, we know there are about 100 kids a year that are diagnosed with a critical illness that would qualify for a wish for Make-A-Wish. So we are presently trying to grant between 90 and 100 wishes a year within our 15-county region. And nationwide, there are over 27,000 kids a year that qualify for a wish for Make-A-Wish. So the demand is great. We knock on wood, in our chapter, we have been very blessed thanks to the support of the community and, a lot of generous individuals, foundations, and corporations helping us to raise enough money to be able to grant all the, to meet the demand of our wishes on an annual basis. And tomorrow night's celebration, what we'll be kicking off the year of the Wish Granter, is going to be our biggest opportunity to showcase our mission to the people that will be attending, but also to help raise significant funds to help grant about 20% of the wishes we're going to do over the course of the next 6 months.
No better way to do it with the co-founder and father of the organization.
Exactly.
If you want to find out more information, we'll have a link to it on our website as well, but it's neny.wish.org, neny.wish.org. What do you consider a child? Is it 18, under 18? Or
between 2.5 and 18 years of age.
2.5 to 18.
There's only two criteria a child has to meet. They have to be within that age range and have to have a critical illness. We have a continuum of eligible diagnoses. That's why we work closely with the pediatric medical community to refer kids to us, that would qualify for a wish. And that's the only criteria. We don't worry about their socioeconomic status or anything else. So
when it comes to just the story that Tommy was telling, and what it meant to that child, I assume. I mean, you see that replicated in the 100 or so.
Oh, very much so. I mean, I've been a wish granter myself for the last 11 years. I mean, I've been with the chapter 13 years as CEO, but I've been granting wishes since 2008 and working on my 15th wish right now. And I will tell you, as Tommy said, it's amazing what the Wish experience does for these kids to really bring hope, strength, and joy to them at a very difficult point in their lives. And the other thing I'm really proud of is the fact that, we include the whole family, in that Wish experience, because we recognize that it's not just the child that's struggling, but also the entire family. So it's healing for everybody involved.
Make-A-Wish Northeast New York's 2019 Gala takes place tomorrow at 6 p.m. at the Hall of Springs in Saratoga Springs, New York. You can visit neny.wish.org for more information. That link will be posted along with this interview at wamc.org/roundtable. Bill Trigg, thank you very much for being with us, CEO of Make-A-Wish Northeast New York.
Thank you.
Have a great time tomorrow night. Tommy Austin, thank you so much for sharing your story and for the beautiful work that you have done over the years. Mm. It's a great pleasure to have you here.
It certainly is my pleasure, and it's my honor. And thank you for all you do for us.
Thank you very
children.
Much. Thank you very much. Again, you can find out more at neny.wish.org.